We like things to be big in the U.S. Right? When I was going to school in Canada, I'd show up with a 44-ounce drink from Speedway, mostly gone by that point, and my friends and professors would just shake their heads. One called it Texas size, which is pretty true. We're obsessed with big, right? Which is why we always seem to have such trouble with Jesus going small, right? This same sense of confusion was how I felt when I was watching that 2003 remake of The Italian Job. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's this great heist movie with some epic car chases, but unlike those car chases from 60s movies like Bullet with Chargers and Mustangs, they used Mini Coopers, right? Which are not just small cars. These are tiny cars, micro cars. They're not cars built for power or top speed, but for something else, right? They're agile and they can fit into the smallest places. Now, the image of these tough guys, and they're tough guys, using tiny cars is still kind of revolutionary in our supersized culture, even now. A culture which saw a rise of the SUV more than double pedestrian fatalities in the 2000s, because front impact rose from the legs to the chest. It wasn't that more people were hit, it's that those who were more likely to die. Bigger isn't always better. And Jesus' teaching, especially in Luke, plays off of this size bias that we have. The mustard seed, that's our prime example, right? Tiniest speck of a thing. Turns out that even the smallest faith can be enough. And we know what it feels like to have that tiny thing cause such a serious effect. Just get a tiny pebble in your shoe, not a big one, a tiny one that's sharp, right? Or that bit of sand when you're at the beach gets in your eye or in your mouth. Or when you're eating popcorn, seriously, kernels between your teeth is about as painful as things get. Yeast, seeds, even David against Goliath. Small things, big, big impact. This is the substance of this revolutionary idea woven through Jesus' teachings, that the world values big. Right? A big God who can beat up other gods. The mighty nation with the giant army. Huge towers scraping the sky. Big ministries filling big churches with big people rocking to big music, praising our big God. Just like Rome, we aim to impress. Go big or go home. But it isn't a big faith that throws the mulberry tree into the sea. It's the small faith, not supersized, micro-sized. For the last several chapters in the gospel we call Luke, Jesus has been talking about how hard this following Jesus thing is, right? Because we live in the midst of a world oriented in the opposite direction. How hard it is to love the unlovable and to bring in the one cast out, to love the one who has rejected you and show mercy when they seek forgiveness. Are you kidding me? Then in chapter 16, the last 2 weeks, Jesus has been casting an image of what the world looks like. A vision like our own world. Really close to our own world. And what it takes to use the power of the world against itself, like a spiritual jiu-jitsu. Images which show how the kingdom is peeking through into this world as we know it. like a mustard seed found among the redwoods. The evangelist has peppered these ideas throughout, including like the least of these being greater than John the Baptist, right? Or putting the child in the midst of them, asking, whoever welcomes this child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me, for the least among all of you is the greatest. The smallest being the greatest isn't just some rhetorical device. It's the way of the kingdom. And perhaps it's so because it's at odds with the way of the world. Right? And yet, these sayings we get for today are still pretty weird. Right? We get three sayings. First one about being thrown into the sea with a millstone to weigh us down. Great. That's uplifting right there. Then tossing a mulberry tree into the sea. And then having dinner with slaves, all very different and seemingly unconnected. Not even this small, big dynamic makes sense of them just yet. So what gives? Again, our focus is on the kingdom peeking through. Now that first one about the stumbling block, it starts with this idea about the little ones, the micro-sized. For Luke, the people he's talking about at the beginning of this chapter are people literally closer to the ground. Children. Small people like Zacchaeus, who we'll meet later. People bent over from sickness or from working in the fields. The ones cast out into our gutters, the people closest to the dirt. This is the reminder that we get each year around Ash Wednesday that it's all about the dirt. How the first human, Adam, was named for the dirt, came from the dirt, and was given the job to till the dirt. And we, like that first human, come from that same dirt. And we remind each other, remember, you are dust. And to dust you shall return. So to be a stumbling block to such a one, the holiest, the one who's reaching toward holiness in the soil, rather than in the sky, is the gravest sin. Better to be cast into the water and removed than be there to prevent the kingdom from breaking through. So that sets the stage for that mulberry tree, right? Now, we probably don't know this, but the mulberry tree was seen as an imposter, along with the sycamore, actually. It was supposed to have been thought, I guess, that to look like a fig tree, this mulberry tree, looked like a fig tree, but unlike a fig tree, it doesn't bear fruit. So this image of casting with our micro faith, the mulberry tree, is to remove the stumbling block, right? The one not bearing the fruit of the Spirit, the imposter. So then that third image, the dinner with the slaves. This third example might be confusing, especially after we've just had this whole conversation about welcome, being welcomed to the table, welcoming everyone to the table, the prostitute, the man with dropsy, the person bent over, tax collector, sinners. All these are fresh in our minds. And here he is seeming to say, just be a slave if you're a slave. But Jesus is letting the kingdom peek through into our world where slaves and division are present, still present. And he assumes that we don't do what he says for us to do. This then is the turn at the end. After we've had our dinner, when we've done what our culture has encouraged us to do, to treat our slaves as slaves rather than as brothers and sisters. So then the kingdom comes and we have to answer for what we've done. And we say, we just did what we thought we were supposed to do. I mean, isn't this the argument the Pharisees use about Torah? About the law, about Sabbath? We're doing what we were taught was best. What we hear in every generation when we discover that we have transgressed, or our ancestors or our grandparents have transgressed and made mistakes, that's what they were taught. We're doing what we were taught. All these are obstacles for the kingdom, not a description of it. The kingdom is peeking through. It's a tiny pinhole, light barely visible. Truth revealed in the midst of pain. Jesus is still speaking to his disciples here, to his closest followers, already called apostles. The ones he has challenged to see past our world into these thin spaces where the kingdom is somehow visible here. And he invites them to not only be his students who observe him, but observe how he sees the world. He invites them to become students of small things. Not because big is bad and small is good, but because big is overvalued and small is rejected. And today, not much has changed. Cast aside the runts of the litter. We value those of us who can reach the top shelf and think we're reaching up to God, and our more diminutive members, we often say, at least they aren't left-handed, right? Well, we probably don't really say that anymore. We stopped that a few decades ago. But for Jesus, these connections are so important. We can learn compassion from our children and generosity from our homeless. And this is still so revolutionary an idea that we share videos on Facebook to prove it's true. Because otherwise we don't believe it. Jesus tells us not to look up to the heavens for God, for a kingdom coming in glory, one which will save us from all the challenges of this life and maybe erase our school or medical debt that we can't ever seem to pay off. But don't look up for the kingdom. Look down. Look at the dirt, at the people who work it, or play in it, or sleep in it. That's where we'll find the kingdom. And when we find it, how much more rewarding is it to roll in it? Much better than diving into Scrooge McDuck's money bin. Dirt's much more forgiving than gold and silver, and far more than those who love such things.